contrary to popular belief, it's not just Mike Tomlin press conferences that make us love him around here. Now, I'd take him as the head coach of my team today. Or tomorrow if he needed time to pack up his stuff.
That's ball in life as well.
The Rooney family will not let him get away. We know that to be sure. They defy the vocal minority who thinks that Mike Tomlin is not good enough. I just don't know how you can see that, how you can come to that conclusion. However, everyone's entitled to their own opinions. For their loyalty to coaches and for their commitment to winning and for their desire to empower their people to make decisions and to be successful, I put the Rooney family, longtime owners of the Steelers, among the most effective owners in sports. And no one has mentioned this tonight. We're not just talking NFL. We're talking all pro sports. But how about the Hunt family? They have, you want to talk about hiring the right people and empowering the right people and paying the right people and collecting an incredible group of front office people and coaches and obviously players and inciting loyalty. The Hunt family, they're right now the most relevant franchise in sports. And they've won 3 Super Bowls in the last, is it 5 or 6 years? And I know a lot of that has to do with the fact that they support their people. And they only become prominent or in the news when the trophies come out, which is nice. You don't see them very often otherwise.
That was beautiful.
Other than their charity work. But everyone speaks very highly of them and wants to play for this organization now. So we're asking you most effective and least effective owners in sports. Lots of great answers. We're not wanting to make it personal here, so that's why we didn't go best and worst. We feel like people would take aim at Jerry Jones without exception. So you can find the question on my Twix, A-Law Radio, also on our show Twix at Amy After Hours. By the way, if you missed the drama of earlier, a whole new chair means a whole new broadcaster. And somehow producer Pete and Carlos, who was with us earlier, managed to snap a picture of me exulting in my brand new chair. We originally had one here in studio that it didn't sink low enough to go underneath the desk, but I managed to snag another one that was just hanging out in the newsroom. I don't think that's stealing. I think it's using it. No one was using it.
It's acquiring.
There we go. Adding it to our collection here in the main studio, and it is life-changing. Okay, it's workplace changing, and there are photos up on both of our social media sites. After Hours with Amy Lawrence on Facebook. We'll get back to your calls, 855-212-4227. But a milestone in sports on Tuesday night that actually may never be broken.
Into the front court come the Knights. Williams with 4. Everybody on their feet here in stores. Drive to the hoop. Shot is missed. And a record has been set. From ground zero to 59 conference championships, 23 Final Fours, 11 national championships, win streaks of 70, 90, and 111, and now the all-time winningest coach in the history of college basketball, Gino Auriemma, 1,217 wins in an 85-41 victory here in stores tonight over FDU.
Congratulations to the great Gino Auriemma. 40 years, by the way. They're celebrating year 40, and it works out nicely because he becomes the all-time wins leader in college basketball. Not just women. We're talking all of college basketball. And you hear the call there on Learfield with the longtime voice of UConn Women's Hoops, which is Bob Joyce. This is such an amazing accomplishment in today's college sports landscape for a lot of reasons, right? And Gino addressed some of those after the fact. The changing landscape really does mean that you're not going to see a lot of these coaches who've been established for decades stick around because it's a lot to manage. The NIL, the transfer portal, the constantly changing rosters, the fact that there are players that believe they should get paid or they're going to go to the highest bidder type of thing. I mean, it's a lot to keep up with. And here is Gino Auriemma, who is definitely a dinosaur, definitely a throwback. And it's worth by the way, mentioning his right-hand longtime assistant and associate head coach, Chris Daly, who's been with him all 40 years. She's had so many opportunities to go and coach elsewhere, but she is happy where she is, and he could not do it without her. Every single one of the former players who addressed the packed house at Gamble Pavilion last night did mention Chris Daly, CD, as she's called. She also addressed the crowd. Really neat. There were dozens and dozens of former players on hand from eras gone by. Rebecca Lobo, Jennifer Rosati from those original mid-90s teams that went through the first undefeated season and won the national championship. And I'm thinking about today's women's basketball landscape and how Caitlin Clark has catapulted it to another level, both at the college level as well as in the WNBA. I mean, it's a new stratosphere for women's sports. But Gino Auriemma and his staff did that at UConn. They forced everyone else in women's college hoops to raise their level of coaching and facilities and to make sure that they were recruiting the best and could compete for the best athletes. Because if you weren't going to raise your standards, if you weren't going to meet this high bar set by Gino at stores, well, then you were going to get left behind. And we have seen an explosion in women's college basketball. There's more parity than there's ever been. Now you've got South Carolina, who's dominant. And we saw Iowa in back-to-back national championship games. Tennessee, of course, and what the great Pat Summitt did in winning all the titles that she did. She was an icon and a pioneer. Purdue has won titles. I mean, I could go on and on. Duke has become a power. North Carolina. I mean, there are so many women's basketball teams that can compete now around the country. LSU, of course. And there's so many incredible coaches. But there wasn't a lot of attention on the sport until Gino made it cool and became a dynasty there at UConn. And so he was the first one that really brought the national attention to women's basketball. And now you look at what's happened with Caitlin and how it's become even more impressive the way that people are buying in to women's basketball. But he's been there for 40 years, and he just passed the retired Tara Vonderveer of Stanford last night in this game against FDU. And I wondered too, actually thought about this, Pete, did they line up the games knowing how many he needed to get win number 1217? Because you wouldn't want to bring in, say, I don't know, South Carolina, just for the sake of argument, a team in your own building that would give you a humongous test. Not that you ever have to take wins for, ever can take wins for granted, but I wonder if they lined up these games thinking, okay, it's going to be in here somewhere. If everything holds true to form, we want to make sure it's a team that with all the emotion and all the celebs in the building that, yeah, if our players get distracted, we're still going
to
win.
Yeah, I think they had to have a plan probably, I would say, a year out.
Because, that's a good point.
Because you, for all those players to be there, that's something. Adjusting schedules and a lot of, look, Diana Taurasi and Rebecca Lobo, very busy.
Sue Bird,
all
very
busy.
Yeah, Maya Moore.
They're all, so it's to get them all together at the same time. You have to really have foresight in that regard. And there's probably someone in the stats was probably saying it too. Like, hey, look, he could do it, blah, 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 blah. I was giving all the analytics to it, and it helped.
Interesting. It's a good point. So 1,217 wins, the most in NCAA history, women's or men's, any division. And the record breaker, and again, this is what I mean, his 329th win of his career by at least 40 points. So I don't want to call them a sacrificial lamb because that's not fair, but I suspect that they were looking at these schedules, as you point out, going back to, you know, to the at least months, if not a full year. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Really neat to see the collection of Hall of Famers and champions and Olympians and just iconic women's players that have come from Connecticut who were there to be able to celebrate their former coach. And they all had funny stories. Each of them has a unique relationship with Gino. That's the thing. They talk about family. They talk about relationship. And that's how he has crafted this program.
I'll be very brief, but I just want everyone to take a second and to look around, because it's not very often in life where you get to experience something that has never been done before, and it's not very often in life that you get to experience something that will never be done again. And that's what all of you have just witnessed here with 1,217 wins. This is a program that's been built on celebrating teams, celebrating one another, and never celebrating yourself. But tonight, we get to step back and let all of us celebrate Coach and celebrate CD and celebrate one another. 11 national championships, 111 games in a row, 23 Final Fours, 15 of the last 16. But the one common thread that all of the players have here is that we are part of at least one win for Coach Auriemma. And the common thread for all of the people that are watching in the stands is you were able to watch at least one of the 1,217. And no matter what, over the course of the last 40 years, whether it's the 160 people who have played for Coach Auriemma or the thousands and thousands of fans who have watched these young women, that one thread will go through us and will unite us forever. And we can all be proud that we were not only members of the UConn women's basketball sorority, the sisterhood, but that we got to play in front of the best fans in the country and continue to do so. And again, just let it marinate for a second that this is something that has never been done before and will never be done by another program or coaching staff again.
Vanderveer is retired. That's Rebecca Lobo, by the way, who is one of the original stars for Gino Auriemma. Again, part of making women's basketball cool there in Storrs, Connecticut. She was one of 63 former players that were there in attendance. It was really cool to see some of the greats. And she was talking about there the fact that it may never or it won't be done again. She uses pretty strong language. Behind Tara is Mike Krzyzewski, retired. Pat Summitt, who's passed away, of course. And then you think about some of the other coaches that are high on the list, the fact that they have also walked away from the game because it's just not worth it. The rat race that you have to go through anymore. And Gino mentioned that, the changing landscape. It's mentally and physically can be a grind, but just wears you out, he said. And he did a great address to the crowd there and made his jokes. He's very dry sense of humor, very sarcastic, kind of no nonsense, and really does consider these to be extended family members. And he talks about taking in 18-year-olds and how it's like having new kids every single year. But all those different players in attendance, even for that one night to honor him.
I was shocked because they had to pay their own way. and if you know any of these guys, you know, they all have their Holy Communion money. But they, I think Dee and Rebecca and Maya Sue, you know, they said it. There's a thread, there's a bond that whether they played on the same team or not, there's a thread that goes through all of them that binds them together. For me, it was... It made it easy to answer the question about how do I feel about what just happened, and you can just point over there and say, "This is what I was fortunate enough to be able to have." Not any coach in America has had the good fortune, the privilege to have the players that I've had.
Gino Auriemma, all-time wins leader in college hoops. And, man, it was a star-studded celebration for him in Storrs, Connecticut at Gamble Pavilion last night. And so congratulations to the program. 40 years, he and Chris Daly, and just all the women who've gone through there, who have been part of it. You certainly can be proud. At A-Law Radio, who are the most effective and least effective owners in sports? We will get back to that. Coming up, though, a very special guest with a story that you must hear. And then we'll get to your calls as well on the backside. 855-212-4227. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us on this Thursday morning. You know, now and then I like to get off the beaten path, and I really am a storyteller at heart. And so when there is a story that grips me and that touches my heart, a lot of times I want to pass it along to you and make sure that you know the story as well. So for that reason, we are pleased to welcome a special guest to our show who's not used to being awake at this hour Central Time. Her name is Melissa Hill. And Melissa, I just want to make sure you're okay. I know this is out of your regular routine.
Good morning, Amy. I set 6 alarms, and I am here and ready to talk.
Now, coffee or no coffee? Because if you drank coffee, you're not getting back to bed.
No coffee, because I am definitely going back to bed.
Okay, well, thank you so much for doing this. This is amazing. Now, before I start asking you questions, I want to let our audience know, because our audience is pretty familiar with the Pork Rinds guy, which is your dad, Mark Singleton, who he's been on the show multiple times before with our Hall of Famers and Gridiron Greats, and of course, sponsored our trip to the Super Bowl last year in Vegas. He's with Rudolph Foods, but he's your dad, and more importantly, he is a grandfather, too. And so through him, I found out about you and your family and a new foundation that you've started, and it's called the Archer Foundation. And first, I would love if you would share with us where you got the namesake for your new foundation.
I would love to. And yes, I am not the pork grind guy at all, but I do like to talk. But my favorite thing to talk about is my little boy, Archer Hill, who is the namesake for the Archer Foundation. And he was the absolute coolest kid you could ever imagine meeting in the world, lived life in the biggest way possible, greatest athlete of all time. If you asked him, that's exactly what he would tell you. And our foundation, he is our namesake. He actually passed away in April of this year, which is fueling our work and motivating our work that I'm here to talk to you about today. But had a brief but courageous battle with a very rare brain cancer. And in doing that, really just changed our lives forever. And we hope it's going to change the lives of other families who are still battling that disease today.
I will definitely be sharing the website address, because I know you just launched your website. Your dad was telling me about a big birthday bash for Archer. How did this disease affect your little boy?
It it changed everything, for sure. Changed our family, changed, I think in some ways as his mom, it's changed my DNA, even though the science probably wouldn't back that up. But Archer was diagnosed a little over a year ago in October of 2023. The same week he played a football game and 2 baseball games. We went a few days later just to do some preliminary testing on some things we were a little bit concerned about, and was diagnosed with one of the most aggressive brain cancers that a child could ever have. And instantly just our life changed just in every way possible. And so he went from, you know, running the bases. He definitely wanted me to share that he hit a home run that week, because he did. And slid into home base for the first time when he was 5 years old. And it just, the location of this brain cancer is in the brain stem. So it's not a cancer that can be treated with surgery or chemotherapy. It's just a very hopeless diagnosis. But it changed everything about him physically, but did not change his spirit at all. He went from being able to run and play to struggling to walk and talk. But he just had such a joy about him that it's always been contagious, and it's still contagious even though he's no longer with us. So it was a very dramatic and terrible and devastating diagnosis, but it just opened our eyes to a world we didn't know existed as parents before, and Archer fought hard. He absolutely loved life. He loved everyone and loved being here, and he fought very hard to the end, and that spirit about him just continued on. But the disease was, it's just a relentless monster. And so after 6 months, he graduated to heaven.
I've seen some incredible pictures of your little boy that your dad has shown me and heard some great stories. And before we talk about the foundation and your new mission, I would just really appreciate it if you would share the story of Archer's practice with the Dallas Cowboys, because I think it really underscores the way that he lived life even in those last few months.
Yes. Well, we as people call it practice with the Cowboys. Archer referred to it as the day he was the head coach for the Dallas Cowboys, because that's how he acted. The Cowboys organization was incredible to us, and they did invite us to practice at the very end of Archer's radiation treatment. And so he was getting some functionality back, so he was walking again, he was talking again. He was a little bit quiet and reserved because he'd been through a lot, and so we weren't quite sure what kind of experience he was going to have there. But we thought, you know, let's go for it. Archer has two teenage brothers. Mm. Our oldest, Connor, was a senior in high school when Archer was diagnosed, and then Hudson was a freshman. And so they were 100% in. No matter what Archer wanted to do, like, they were going to practice. But the team was just absolutely incredible, and everyone knew Archer's name, from the office staff to just walking around in the locker room. And we got out to practice, and we got to watch a little bit of it. And towards the last 10 or 15 minutes, they kind of came and got him and told my husband and I, like, we don't need you anymore. Like, he's one of us. We got him, and he stood on the sidelines and chatted with players and watched the end of practice. And then they asked him, you know, hey, buddy, do you want to say something to the team? And my husband, Matt, and I both were like, okay. Will he? Won't he? We just didn't know. And he's always been our wild card kid. Being, you know, 10 years younger than his oldest brother, he was definitely a wild card. And so he walked out with the team, and the coach just said, you know, this is Archer today, and he has something he wants to say to you. And we all kind of held our breath, and he said in his loudest voice, drop and give me 10 push-ups to the entire team. And they did, every single one of them, minus the head coach, who had just had surgery, got down and gave this six-year-old, he had just turned six, 10 push-ups. And he just stood there like he had the most authority in all of the NFL. And it was hilarious and so Archer, because he ruled our world. And then he got to break the team out, and they did a tunnel for him, and and it was amazing. He got to meet his favorite player, who was Brandon Aubrey, and he was Archer's favorite player because they both wore number 17 jerseys in football. And it's funny because Archer said, you wear my number.
Of course.
Like, it never occurred to him that this professional football player would actually have been number 17, maybe first. Mm. And so they had a really sweet interaction, and they were just incredible. But he walked away feeling like he was coaching in the NFL, like they might call him up the next week.
That's amazing. Melissa Hill is with us here from, are you in the Dallas area too?
We are, yes.
With us from the Dallas area, her son, Archer, inspired many, brought joy to so many, and now the family is carrying on his legacy and inspiring others with the new Archer Foundation. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. What is the mission of this new foundation in your son's honor?
Oh, yes. The Archer Foundation is dedicated to families that are dealing with the diagnosis of this very aggressive brain cancer. And it's really related to direct family support. So just living through our own family's experience, you can't even imagine. Like, I still today struggle to imagine, like, the reality of this diagnosis and how isolating and devastating it is. And in doing that, we just realized that families have so many needs beyond anything a doctor or a hospital can provide for them. And so that's really where we feel called to stand in that gap financially, to say your number one concern should be taking care of your kiddo. And when you get a terminal diagnosis, the definition is that your days are now numbered officially. Mm-hmm. And the financial burden is huge on families. And not everyone can just step away from their job and spend 24/7 with their kid, even though that's desperately what they would like to do. And so we are just driven and determined to make sure that we can take some of that financial burden off of families' plates so they can really focus on being with their kiddo and doing everything they can to extend their life.
I don't think people realize the financial burden, or maybe it's something that when you get that diagnosis, you don't think about instantly. Of course, what you care most about is your loved one. But on your website, a couple of the stats that you share, 1 in 4 families could lose up to 40% of their annual income because of work disruptions, or maybe even travel, trying to get the best care and the best treatment. And then 1 in 3 families have to quit or change jobs during the course of their child's treatment. And so when you say it changed your family forever, I can imagine these are just some of the challenges that you faced.
Absolutely. And that was so eye-opening for us. And honestly, we wish Archer was here with us right now, still fighting. And many families are in some ways more fortunate than us that they're in the battle longer. But on the flip side of that is that financial burden just extends longer and longer. And that's where we just feel like we can't go back to life before, where we just didn't know that this existed and that people are not struggling with it. And traveling to clinical trials, which right now is the only chance for patients with this diagnosis, and not for a cure yet, we're not even close to that, but to really just extend quality of life for children, that financial burden is completely on a family. Insurance does not pay for that travel. Their stays in hospitals for sometimes months at a time is completely on that family to pay for. And then they're away from home. Sometimes we took Archer to a different state in our quest for a clinical trial. And so there's expenses that still happen at home with other children. Plus you relocated for an extended period of time and that family is bearing that burden.
What about your sons, your teenage sons? How are they doing?
So they are awesome. Just like Archer. I have to say they get it from me, but they mostly get it from their dad.
From their grandfather.
Well, if you ask him, but luckily he's not on today, so he can't tell you that. They are such great kids. My oldest is a freshman in college now. He's playing baseball, which is his dream. And so it was a very unique experience when Archer was in kindergarten and our oldest was a senior to have those two bookends, those really exciting life experiences, and then have it happen during this journey where we were losing our littlest. But it showed just the integrity of my boys, and we're so incredibly proud of them. So my oldest is in college. My middle is a sophomore, living life without his brother as his ride everywhere. So, you know, we've been working through all those feelings.
Right.
But they're such great kids, and they loved their brother so much, so much. They made him rotten, and they made him have a wicked, inappropriate sense of humor at all times. They are just by far our greatest joys.
Mm. So how are you doing it? How are you getting the word out? And if you got a website and we're going to share it, but do you even begin to tackle this enormous challenge of trying to support families who will hear this diagnosis in their futures?
So it feels overwhelming in a lot of ways for us, but also feels exactly right, which sounds like completely conflicting things, but just doing what we would normally do in as many ways as possible, which is talk about Archer. And that to me is like the selfish benefit of this, is that I get to be on with you today and have so many people hear me talk about the coolest kid ever, but also raise awareness. And that's really what stands out to us the most, is like the easiest thing to do, because just like our family had no idea that something like this could have existed 15 months ago, we know that when other people hear this story too, and that we are just a regular family playing baseball and living our best life in the suburbs, that this could happen to us. It's just an awareness that makes you go, oh my gosh, like you can't even imagine, but you also know that once you know about it, I think people feel drawn to say, I need to do something about it. Mm. And that's our hope and our prayer. And so just raising awareness first with opportunities like you're giving me today, and then just telling a story everywhere, and then also connecting with hospitals in not just our state but other states to say, when you have families come in, send them to us. and we can help stand in that financial gap for them. So those are the two big things that the foundation is working on right now. And then trying to raise funds. We had an incredible birthday party. Archer turned 7 on November 7th. And so we knew even before we started the foundation that we were going to celebrate, because just like everything in life, Archer loved his birthday. So big. No surprise. And so we just decided as a family we were going to do all of his favorite things, which was bounce houses and dunk tanks and just all the crazy, fun, weird Archer things that made him him. And so it really then grew into more of a community birthday party. And we had almost 500 people attend, which was amazing.
Wow.
And that gave people an opportunity to celebrate not just his life and legacy, but also learn about the foundation. So it was a tremendous, tremendous kickoff that we know he would have loved. Mm.
Well, there are some really cool photos of Archer, and more about Archer Matthew Hill on the foundation, the website. It's archer-foundation.org. I'm going to share it on my social so that we can get the word out there too. And Melissa, I can't even imagine how hard this is. Not that you would ever forget your son or that you could ever put it in the background, but I admire you so much for not only talking about it and doing so without coffee, but also taking your family's extraordinary challenges and your grief and finding a way to help other people so that they don't have to go through it quite the same way that you did. So thank you so much for a few minutes and for sharing your little boy with us.
Amy, it has been a true joy and pleasure, and to me an honor to get to talk about him. Like, I can hope that you know by now, he really felt like he was famous. But for me to get to say his name every single day to people who knew him and didn't know him, it makes my mommy heart really happy. So I appreciate that chance with you today.
Awesome. Well, we will definitely connect again. I know your dad, Archer's grandpa, is not going to let me forget. So
next time we'll be on together. I promise you that.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Melissa.
Thank you, Amy.
It's archer-foundation.org, but I will tweet it. And I love the story about the Dallas Cowboys. These are things you don't hear. I know as we're talking about most and least effective owners in sports, people are pointing to Jerry Jones. And I get it. I mean, that we're fans and we're invested. But there are a lot of things that these franchises do behind the scenes that you would never know about. And that story, it was one that I wanted to make sure we got to share about Archie. And please go check out the website, the photos, the story. What an incredible family that they're not going to allow their grief to be the end, right? They're going to make sure that they can use Archie's life, as brief as it was, too brief, to inspire and help other people. So it's awesome. I'm so glad that Melissa was able to get up early and join us from Dallas at 4:20 Central Time. Let's see. I don't even know how to transition from that. It's not really important. At A-Law Radio, I'll share the website right now. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Marco Belletti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
All right, Amo, plenty of NBA action with the Knicks looking to get their 5-game road trip off on the right foot.
Gets across midcourt, Knicks by 15, 5 and change to go. Passes to a cutting in, and Obi along the baseline, kick out to Towns. Pump fake, sidestep, left wing 3, got it! Karl Anthony Towns from downtown. He's got 32 points on 11 of 16 shooting.
Knicks shot 58% from the floor as a team. Karl Anthony Towns, 34 and 10 rebounds. Jalen Brunson led the way with 36 and 10 assists. Knicks rolled the Suns 138-122, pushed their win streak up to 4. Call courtesy of the Knicks Radio Network. Elsewhere, the Cavs now 16-1. They drubbed the Pelicans 128-100. Bucks punished the Bulls 122-106. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 41 points, 9 rebounds, 8 assists. Rockets drilled the Pacers 130-113. Grizzlies handled the Sixers 117-111 as Philly now 2-12 to begin the season. Warriors punished the Hawks 120-97. Andrew Wiggins with 27. Clippers finished off the Magic 104-93. James Harden 24 and 7 rebounds. And the Thunder erased the Blazers 109-99. Giants, they sit at 2-8, made a change with Daniel Jones to the bench, inserting Tommy DeVito as the starter as he leapfrogged Drew Locke. Locke is still scratching his head as how he remained the backup.
You know, that's a question I might still have for myself. I was expressed to me that I was going to be the two. And I don't know, it's just an interesting situation. Not much I can really say about it besides, again, I'm going to be here for him. And you know, we're still communicating, still very good friends.
College hoops: Gonzaga pounded Long Beach State 84-41. Eighth-ranked Alabama outscored number 25 Illinois 100-87. Texas A&M overpowered Southern 71-54. And Rutgers knocked off Merrimack 74-63. College football: Ohio down Toledo 24-7, while Buffalo took out Eastern Michigan 37-20. Chris Sale, your NL Cy Young winner in his first season with the Braves. Tigers' Tarek Skubal took home the AL honors. UConn's Gina Auriemma became the NCAA all-time basketball wins leader 1,217 as he passed Stanford's Tara Vanderveer. I'm Marco Belletti.
Hey, like us on Facebook. Our handle is INF Sportsnet. That's INF Sportsnet for our Facebook page. This is the Infinity Sports Network.
This is one of the most talented teams that has ever been assembled by the New York Jets. I wanted to give this team the most opportunity to win this season. I feel that we had to go in a different direction, and that's why I did that today.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
That's the voice of Woody Johnson. I think a lot of people are pointing to him and saying he is absolutely one of the least effective owners in sports right now. Firing his head coach after, what was it, week five. Undermining his general manager. Much more into the meddling addition of ownership. And now just the way that he's putting it out there about his people and the way that we're hearing stories of him getting more and more involved in the day-to-day decisions as opposed to leaving the people that he's hired to take care of those decisions. It's become a mess. And constant change equals constant losing in sports. And so Woody Johnson is made another mess that he's going to have to fix. Who are the most and least effective owners in sports? Well, that's the question that's on the table, and we're getting a lot of your answers. 855-212-4227. Mike is in Atlanta. Welcome, Mike.
Hey, Amy, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you, sir.
Good. Hey, Amy, a retired NFL exec said last year or 2 years ago, fans would be surprised of how many owners are not in the championship business. And that made me take a look at Arthur Blank of the Atlanta Falcons. They've been here as long as I've been born. They came in 65. I was born in 65. And when Arthur took over the Falcons, he has not hired a coach with head coach experience. Dan Reeves came with the purchase of the Falcons. And that was the last time we had a coach that was that had head coach experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we had Bill Belichick sitting there wanting the job, and you came off for Raheem Morris, I'm not talking about personality, a good guy, whatever. I'm talking about somebody with championship experience.
Yes. Or at the very least, somebody who'd been in the locker room, who had stood and addressed a team before.
Right. We did it. And it just made me look at the franchise and made me look at everything all the moves we made. We're not in the championship business. And your affiliate down here in Atlanta, they actually don't like me to call. Because I just laid it out like that, and they don't like that. Because, you know, I mean, Raheem's a good guy. But when you're talking about Belichick and Raheem, come on. And then the staff that they allowed Raheem to put together, subpar. And you saw the beating, you said Monday morning, you saw the beating Denver gave us last Monday. And they're down here now trying to figure out, I'm talking
what
about
happened?
Everybody. What happened and how can we fix it?
Right.
It's just Arthur Blank. We're not in the business. And so, amen, I'm not calling, not personal, but I can't get mad when I go to the circus and I see clowns I gotta get mad because I bought tickets to the circus.
I like that.
Have
metaphor.
Have a good day, Amy. Bye.
He drops the circus metaphor and then he's out. So who are the most and least effective owners in sports? Speaking of Belichick, there's some talk that if the Mara family wanted him in New York to coach the Giants, he would show up in a heartbeat. Well, right now, there's a lot of debate about whether or not Brian Daboll stays or goes, but Daboll has made a change to Tommy DeVito. Away from Daniel Jones, Tommy DeVito, who's kind of a cult hero. He grew up, well, not only a Giants fan, but he grew up playing his high school football in Northern Jersey, just 15 minutes away from MetLife Stadium. Actually had some success with the Giants last season. So they skip over Drew Lock, they bench Daniel Jones, and now it's Tommy DeVito who gets the call to start.
I wouldn't say surprised. I was open for all, you know, outcomes. You know, it's kind of something that I've been preparing for since last year. You know, you always say, like, stay ready, even though you're quarterback three, like, stay ready, you never know. And, you know, it's kind of similar to last year, you never know. But continuing to work throughout this whole season so far, learn, practice reps, make the most of it, so that way when your opportunity comes, you'll be ready for it.
So Tommy DeVito goes from QB3 to the starter. And it's interesting to hear some of the reaction around the locker room, like Dexter Lawrence, and how he took the news of Daniel Jones getting benched.
Definitely hard, but I've been a part of this business. Just like last year when they traded my best friend in the middle of the season. It's part of the business, so and I understand that part of it. And like I said before, but I feel for Daniel. Works hard. He's a great dude. Relatable. Yeah, it just sucks for him.
It definitely does. That is the business, and it seems to signal the end of Daniel Jones despite the big contract that they gave him. I don't know that you could put the Maras in the category of least effective, but they have made some choices and some changes that I think people would question. Now, not the hiring of Daboll. That was supposed to be a home run. But how long do they stick with him? They haven't had a quarterback that's been a steady and positive influence. They've made some poor choices at quarterback. They made some poor choices in the draft and who they've drafted. Some of those haven't panned out because of injuries. And so, yeah, we'll get producer Pete's reaction. But sometimes the ownership gets judged on these decisions, these personnel decisions, too. This portion of the show brought to you by Ethos Life, the easy way to get life insurance in 10 minutes, up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam and just a few health questions. Get your free quote at checkethos.com. Not available in all states. I have no idea why Pete is wearing a Jets hoodie right now instead of a Giants hoodie.
Well, I worked for the Giants.
You're a Jets fan? Jets fan. Oh, gotcha. Okay. I'm going to make sure I keep that straight.
But I have some allegiances to both. It's a unique setup.
That sounds like.
But I would say, I think it's time for John Mara may not be the least effective owner, but it's time for him to pick a good coach and a good GM. It's really time. Maybe it's Shane Daboll, but you know, I mean, he's had a few shots at this, and they haven't really worked out the way they should.
Agreed. And so you wonder, like, the what have you done for me lately? And those Super Bowls are more and more distant memory. The Giants have been really bad lately. So, there's a lot to this. But I think Tommy DeVito is more about just giving the fans something to get excited about because they were really excited about him at the beginning. All right, sharing the website for the Archer Foundation on our show Twix at Amy After Hours. We're back with you tonight after we kick off week 12. Boom!